Thank you. The subject of this talk is the FOXI sounding rocket payload. FOXI stands for the Focusing Optics X-ray Solar Imager, and this is a rocket payload that was flown for the first time in November of last year. I'm happy to say that that was a successful flight. FOXI was built at the Space Sciences Laboratory at UC Berkeley with Sam Krecker as the PI, and Stephen Crist at Goddard was the project scientist for FOXI. We also benefited from two very good collaborations with NASA Marshall, where our optics were fabricated, and the AstroH group at JAXA ISAS in Japan, who generously provided our detectors. The outline of what I'll talk about is very simple. I'll tell you why we wanted to build FOXI. I'll tell you how we built it and what its capabilities are. I'll describe to you our first flight and our preliminary results. And if time, I'll tell you a bit about our future plans for the project. I don't have time here to go into all the reasons why we would like to study hard X-rays from solar flares in greater detail than we already have. Suffice it to say that after 11 years, RESI is still doing a remarkable job of studying solar flares and non-thermal electrons from thermal to thermal, non-thermal energies and all the way up to gamma rays. However, we still have very rare observations of the acceleration region in the corona itself, and there are two main technological reasons why. For one, the corona density is very low, and because Bremsstrahlung intensity goes with ambient density, that means that Bremsstrahlung sources in the corona are very faint. This requires better sensitivity than we currently have in order to systematically study these faint sources where we think that the electrons are accelerated. Second, the density in the chromosphere is a lot higher than it is in the corona, and that means that the flare foot points tend to be very bright, and so not only do we have to study faint sources, we have to do it in the presence of much brighter sources nearby. This plot gives you an idea of the magnitude of the problem. These histograms compare occulted flares where the foot points are covered up by the solar disk, and in this case, most of the flux is coming from coronal sources, that's the black line here, with fluxes from flares that occur on the disk, in which case most of the flux is coming from the foot points. And you can see that there's a difference here of 1 to 2 orders of magnitude. This is really right on the edge of RESI's dynamic range, and that means that most of the time it's difficult to study these sources at all and surely in detail in comparison with these sources. And so I'll just end this slide by pointing out that indirect imaging, such as RESI does, is intrinsically limited in both these respects, in sensitivity and dynamic range, and so we would like to consider other possibilities. So let's now switch to considering direct imagers instead. Why not simply focus X-rays as we do at other wavelengths? Well, it's difficult to focus X-rays. You can do it, but you need a very small angle of incidence, roughly less than about half a degree for the kinds of energies we're talking about, energies of above a few keV or so. But it is possible to do it with the right configuration, and a typical sort of telescope that's used looks like this. We have two mirrors, a parabolic and hyperbolic sections. Incoming X-rays bounce at very small grazing angles off both those mirrors and then focus a few meters away from this. Some nice things about this kind of setup is you can construct these mirrors to be entire revolutions, like is shown here, that's half a revolution, and you can also nest mirrors of different diameters together to get more effective area. If you can manage to do that, then you gain two immediate advantages. One is that since you're focusing the photons down onto a small detector area, your background falls by orders of magnitude, and this improves your sensitivity by quite a bit. And the other is that direct focusing instruments like this tend to have a nice tight point spread function that drops off as we go farther away from the source, and I'll show you some examples of that later. Also, this has kind of been the standard in soft X-ray astronomy for really decades, but it is only in the past 10 or possibly 15 years that it's been possible to do this for hard X-ray energies. An example of that is the high energy replicated optics balloon payload built by Brian Ramsey that provides some heritage for FOXI. Of course, there's FOXI itself, and there's also NuSTAR, an X-ray observatory that launched just about a year ago. NuSTAR is an astrophysics hard X-ray observer up to 80 keV and has produced some remarkable results in the last year, I'll talk a bit more about that later as well. Okay, now it's time to talk about FOXI. FOXI was funded under the Low-Cost Access to Space Program in 2007, and as I mentioned earlier, we had our first flight late last year, and the flight was a success. Now, our technological goal was to demonstrate that focusing optics are now a viable method for looking at the sun and measuring non-thermal X-rays from solar flares. However, although we'd really like to use this technology to study flares, one cannot count on being so lucky as to have a flare occur within a few minutes observing time with a rocket. So keeping that in mind, we decided to make our science goal a search for hard X-rays from non-thermal electrons in nanoflares in the quiet sun. And these non-thermal signatures would be interesting to study for several reasons. For one, it gives us a better sense of quiet sun dynamics. It also helps to fill in the distribution of flare sizes. And it's important because nanoflares could be important for coronal heating. The heart of our technology is really our replicated nickel optics that were built at NASA Marshall. And these were produced by Brian Ramsey's group, building on heritage from the HERO balloon payload. In the interest of time, I think I won't go into all of the details of the optics. We do have quite a bit more information on this on a poster that's on display in the other room. There are 7 optics modules, as shown here. Each of them has 7 mirrors within it, and each of those modules has a dedicated silicon strip detector located 2 meters away from the optics. The silicon strip detectors were donated by the Astro H group at ISAS, led by Tadayuki Takahashi. And these are fine pitch sensors. A 75 micron pitch translates to about 7.5 arc seconds at our 2 meter focal length. And they're thin, low power detectors. These plots are meant to give you an idea of what FOXI can do. There's a lot of lines on here, so I'll walk through them one by one. Let's start with the effective area plot up here. The dashed lines are the effective area for the optics alone, not considering the rest of the instrument. And the solid lines are the effective area once we take into account thermal blanketing absorption and the efficiency of the detector. The blue lines are the nominal effective area for this flight, so that's really the one we'll concentrate on. The red lines show an improved effective area for our second flight that is scheduled for next year. And I've also shown on here the gray curve that represents RESI's effective area, so you can see how much better than RESI we're doing at lower energies. I should also point out here that there is an important deviation from this nominal curve, and that's that we had some additional absorption due to thermal blankets that had gotten into our optical path during the flight. We discovered this after the flight once we disassembled the payload, and it was due to thermal blankets moving during the flight. So this blue curve is no longer, strictly speaking, correct, but the effective area is still above that of RESI for all of these energies. And the problem is really worst at low energies, so above 7 or 8 keV, we do not have much additional absorption. Over here we have the point spread function. Again, there are a lot of lines on here. We've compared FOXI's point spread function with some soft X-ray observers here. The black line shows you an early measurement of FOXI's point spread function, and the blue line shows you a more recent measurement using an updated measurement system. And what you can see is that as we go away from the center of the source, once we've gotten about 30 arc seconds away or so, we've already dropped by over 2 orders of magnitude. Now, the point spread function for RESI is a lot harder to quantify because it's an indirect observer. And so we've chosen to represent that with this gray band meant to represent that the point spread function really doesn't drop as you go farther away from the source, so that every photon within the field of view provides a background for all other sources. I'll walk through these numbers very quickly. We are observing from 4 to 15 keV. The upper edge of that energy range is mainly limited by the focal length that we can achieve within a rocket and also by our silicon strip detectors. We observe with half a keV energy resolution. We can look at a quarter of the sun at the time. Our nominal angular resolution that we had wanted was 12 arc seconds or better. Now, it turns out that the optics fabrication was able to be done quite a bit better than that. The optics have a resolution of about 6 arc seconds on axis, and when combined with the pitch of the detectors, we have an angular resolution of better than 10 arc seconds altogether. That's what the instrument can do. Next, on to the launch. Foxy was launched from the White Sands Missile Range in New Mexico on November 2nd of last year at 11:55 a.m. And we observed above 150 kilometers for a total observing time of about 6.5 minutes. We reached an apogee of 340 kilometers. That's a view from our onboard optical camera that we put on there for fun. These images are meant to give you an idea of where we pointed the payload and a rough idea of what kind of count rates we observed from those targets. The background image is an AIA 94 angstrom image, and the black boxes show you the four different Foxy targets. The first two targets have active regions within the field of view. The third target is meant to be primarily a quiet sun target without active regions. And the fourth target includes an active region that had just rotated beyond the western limb. Now, our count rates from the first three targets were quite low, around 10 counts per second. And when we reached the fourth target, the count rate suddenly jumped by more than an order of magnitude. And it turned out that this was because there was a small microflare in progress in this active region at the time when we pointed at that target. This was an unexpected but very welcome surprise, as you can imagine. After the flight, the payload landed in the desert, and we were able to recover it with essentially no damage, so it's ready to fly again. Now, our strategy for analyzing this data is to use the microflare that was unexpected but can be leveraged. And RESI also observed this flare. So our strategy is going to be to compare our observations with those of RESI to validate our imaging and to nail down what our sensitivity really is. Then, armed with that knowledge, we'll then investigate our counts from the quiet sun and try to determine if there is an intelligible signal there. So let's start with the microflare, and we'll begin with RESI. This is a RESI image of the flare. This is the solar limb. The flare was actually slightly occulted. And all of these other colors in here are showing you imaging artifacts, essentially imaging noise. If we look at the same image with Foxy, it looks like this. We have the flare in the same place, but we are free of all of the imaging noise. And I should point out that we used the same color scale in making these images so that the lack of noise here is not simply due to tricks with the color scale. If we zoom in on the flare, this is what we find. Here's the RESI clean image. You can see the imaging artifacts around it again. We then pixelate it to match the pitch of the Foxy detectors, and you can compare that with the Foxy image that we see here. This is a combination of our five best detectors, and we have not yet done a thorough deconvolution of the point spread function, which will surely clean up this image quite a bit. Okay, now moving on to the quiet sun, we do have some counts from our non-flaring targets, and this is an example of our second target that we observed for 90 seconds. You can see that there seem to be more counts on the disk than off, and if we examine that statistically, it turns out that that is a real result. After we correct for area, that result is true to the 4.6 sigma level. Now, what could these counts be? Could it be background? Well, if that were the case, we wouldn't expect a difference on disk and off. Could it be thermal emission from active regions? Well, the counts don't really line up on top of the active regions, so we think that's not the case. Could they be single bounce photons from the flare, which was going on the other side of the sun at the time? We think this is unlikely, and we're in the midst of a quantitative analysis in order to rule that out. Could it be non-thermal emission from nanoflares? It could be. We're not ready to say that just yet. Could it be some sort of thermal emission from the quiescent plasma? That's also a possibility. So I will end with just a few concluding thoughts. I think the takeaway messages are two. We've managed to produce the first focused imaging spectroscopy of a solar flare at hard X-ray energies. And the take-home message is really that focusing optics are now ready for solar hard X-ray observations. Now, because this is a dissertation talk, I'd like to acknowledge the profound influence of my advisor, Bob Lin. I'd really like to tell him in person how meaningful and important his guidance has been for me, but unfortunately, that opportunity has passed. So instead, I'll conclude by saying that this experiment's success is a reflection of Bob's inspiration and enthusiasm, and I think I speak for the entire team when I say that despite his absence, his memory continues to inspire us and to guide us. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Nice talk. I had a question about the, you showed the response as a function of photon energy, and it was dropping off fairly quickly around 10 or 15 kilovolts. So what are the prospects of being able to do the focused imaging, you know, in the 20 to 100 keV range? Do you have to change the angles to make them, you know, the tolerances even tighter or what?
Yeah, that's a good question. And we can do focusing hard X-ray optics at higher energies than that, but we are limited by the focal length, which puts a limitation on the grazing angle that we can achieve. So within a rocket, it's hard to push it much higher than this. We do have a second flight that will observe up to roughly 20 keV or so. But a potential future FOXI instrument in space, for example, could have a focal length as long as, say, 10 meters, and then could observe up to 80 or 90 keV. And in that respect, such an instrument would look a little bit similar to NuSTAR, which has already solved some of the technological obstacles in order to creating such an instrument, but it would be well-suited for solar observations and optimized for solar observations.